Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to Informal Paranormal. Today is Monday, July 5th, 2010. I'm Doug Kelly, and I'm here with John Rossi. Hey, John.
Hey, everyone.
My switchboard mic just would not turn on. I tried many times, and it just kept, not turning on. So that's why it took so long. But hey, you listen to good music, so stop complaining. Now, is that a crisis or what? All right, folks, we're so glad you joined us tonight. We're going to talk about sweat, right?
Yeah, among other things.
Yeah. Well, that's an interesting topic. So let's make a couple of announcements before we get going on with us tonight. One announcement is that we got Mike Jones on with us tonight, screening calls. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good. So we invite you to call in if you want to just stop by and say, hey, share what's going on in your world, ask questions, share a topic, all that stuff. This is an informal paranormal. So, get on in with us. Hey, the water's good. All right. So,
Hey, Doug, I got a quick question, though.
Yeah.
If Mike's doing the screenings, how do we keep Mike from getting in and talking to us?
We can mute him anytime we want.
Okay, just check it. No, just kidding, Mike.
Then again, he can unmute himself. So, well, we could hang him up, but then he could call back in. So, you just can't get rid of him.
Aw, yeah, Mike's a good guy.
All right, so call in. There's the chat room. If you're not logged in, you got to log in to type anything. But we'd love to have you. And as far as announcements go, there's a couple. Last board meeting that we had here a little over a week ago, the board assigned John Rossi as the Director of Investigations, so we want to congratulate John. He will be taking active care of the CPFI program, that's the Field Investigator Program for Paranexus, and he's got some great stuff going on, and I think he's a great man for the job, so good job, John.
Well, thank you, Doug.
And let's see, what else? A couple of new members. I hope I get everybody. We have Jen DeGroot, who's a CPI certified investigator. She just joined. And, of course, one of our recent new members is Dale Huey. He was on our program here a couple of weeks ago. He's in the chat room. Hey, Dale. And we have a brand new CPI who's also in the chat room. Kathy Hutton, congratulations, Kathy. I am working on stuff. Yeah, so good for her. She did a good job.
Yeah, way to go.
Another announcement that I have, especially meaningful for Florida investigators, and I've put it in the weekly update for Paranexus, and I've also sent it out as a notice to members. But on September 24th in Bartow, Florida, we're going to be co-hosting a live investigation with the old courthouse there. It's the Polk County Historical Museum. Now, we've been there three times, I believe. I think it's three times, not four, it's three times. We've been there in the last few years, and it's an interesting place. It's got a lot of history to it, and it's a cool place, and a lot of investigators, I should say, have been asking to go in there, and they just didn't want to open it up every time somebody wanted. So what they're doing is they're going to allow a maximum of 35 investigators to come in on Friday, September 24th from 10 to 2 a.m., 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., and we're going to investigate the place. And so if you want to get in on that action, it's $20. It's a donation to the Polk County Historical Museum. You make it at the door. There's more information on Paranexus if you look in the right-hand sidebar under events, there's a PDF you can open up that will give you that information. And we'd love to see you there. Trying to think of any other announcements.
Well, there's another Florida announcement.
Go ahead.
First of all, you might want to squelch that whole rumor that I fired you as the regional director of Florida.
Yeah, I got fired as the regional director of Florida. Believe that.
That was a rumor?
Yeah. Can you do that?
I don't think so, but, you know, we have a new regional director down in Florida for our CPFI program. We want to congratulate Bonnie. Bonnie's now our regional director down there.
Horniak, yes. She's based in St. Pete. Very nice lady. She's also an active investigator with MUFON and has her own group, of course. Very nice person, and we congratulate Bonnie. So, let's talk about SWEAT, John.
Yeah. Well, last Saturday, I'd been invited by a Native American shaman to participate in a SWEAT Lodge ceremony. And I'd never done that before, so I was very intrigued. And he also had invited me to investigate on the land where the SWEAT Lodge is after the ceremony. So that was another, you know, bonus to the invitation. SWEAT Lodge ceremony was an absolutely amazing thing to have done. I definitely want to try to do it again sometime.
Well, walk us through it, because, you know, I haven't been to a SWEAT Lodge, but I'd like to go someday when I grow up. So, you know, help me to know what to expect.
Well, okay. I mean, first of all, he sat down with the people that hadn't been through the ceremony before, and he basically explained how the ceremony was going to work, and also the whole concept of, you know, staying safe during the ceremony in terms of, you know, if you were having any kind of difficulty breathing or you were feeling sick or anything, that all you needed to do is ask for the door, and they pause the ceremony and they get you outside. It's the SWEAT Lodge ceremony isn't like meant to be a physical test. It's not an endurance thing, even though it's definitely wouldn't be for everyone. If, you know, you had certain health issues and stuff like that, you probably wouldn't want to participate in that ceremony. But the ceremony starts out by being smudged and prayed over. And then the ceremony itself, when you're in the lodge, is made up of four parts. The first is like an opening welcome prayer round, if you will. The second one, individuals will pray for people that they don't know, or they pray for the world around them. There's not necessarily a connection. It's more like just putting out good energy to the earth, if you will. The third round is where people will pray for someone who's close to them, like a family member or a loved one, or they pray for themselves to be healed if there's some issue in their life that they need help for. And then the fourth round is made up of where the shaman basically gives thanks for allowing people to safely participate in the ceremony and for listening and just generally giving thanks.
So is the fifth round where they bring in the peyote?
No, actually, this shaman doesn't believe in using any kind of mind-altering substances. That, you know, his belief is that you get to that special place, you know, through yourself and not through another agent.
Well, yeah, that's reasonable.
No, I absolutely agree. You know, because I asked that question, you know, because, you know, sometimes I'm a bit of a wise guy. And it turns out the shaman had a wicked funny sense of humor, so I didn't mind playing with him at times when it was appropriate. So, of course, you know, when he's explaining the ceremony, I'm like, so when do we get to take the peyote? And he laughed because he knew I was just joking around with him. At least I think he knew I was joking with him. You know, he basically said that, you know, they didn't use mind-altering substances, and you know, this was something that came from this was a gift to you, and it comes from you. It's kind of.
Well, I'm not going to him for my sweat lodge. Damn it.
Yeah, a big disappointment. but no, seriously, the technical aspect of the lodge. You know, during each of the rounds, they bring in a series of seven large heated rocks, and the rocks are laid out in the center of the lodge in a very specific manner, and there's a ceremony associated with the laying of the rocks, and they put like sweet grass and I think a certain type of grain and various different things, and you know they're giving thanks and prayer, and then you know basically once those are laid, they close the door of the sweat lodge. And let me tell you, inside the sweat lodge, when they shut that door, it's pitch black. I mean, it is so dark that you can't see your hand in front of your eyes.
Wow,
okay?
Really?
Yeah. And then all of a sudden you hear this big hissing sound, and that's where they've thrown water on them hot rocks.
Mm.
And hot just got hotter, if you know what I mean. Now, when you're in there, you got to imagine this. You're in this incredibly hot, steamy place. It's pitch black. It's quiet. Well, at points, it's quiet. Other points, there's the Native Americans were singing songs very, very quietly. So there's this background, very soothing, like chanting going on. It was very, very, very easy to zone out. In terms of, for me, it was like when I'm trying to meditate or do self-hypnosis and remove myself from like the here and now and take myself to that other place. In that environment, it was very easy to do. One of the things that I noticed was the Native Americans that were involved in the ceremony who had done this numerous times. I mean, almost as soon as the door shut and the water was on and the initial prayers were starting, they were already out. They were already in another place.
Wow. So they had the peyote before you went in.
No, I don't think it's that. I think that it has more to do with being conditioned for being in that environment and immediately being able to, you know, meditate or whatever you want to call it and get to that place. I mean, you and I both know as hypnotists that we can work with clients and basically condition them over time to respond extremely quick to the induction method.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's kind of what's going on there, you know?
Sure.
And I don't want to, you know, I don't want to overemphasize the scientific analytical part of the ceremony because that's really not what it's about. On the other hand, I see that as an important part of it. You know, a lot of times, you know, we talk about, we see various rituals that are associated with the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times, really, when you analyze the ritual, what you're seeing is people through that particular method, they're achieving that altered place. It gets them into that meditative state. It gives them that disconnect from their analytical self.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you'd say like the rhythmic drumming and singing in the background is more or less like a person in hypnosis being counted down and taking them down into the deep hypnosis level.
Oh, absolutely, because, you know, it was happening to me. I was actually at that point struggling not to go under because I was, like, just so intrigued with the process from a hypnotist
mm-hmm.
point of view. Yet the thing was is the shaman wasn't saying, you know, you're getting sleepier and you're – there was none of that directive imaging
mm-hmm.
or anything go on. It was simply, you know, you're essentially – in an environment, you're in a pitch black environment.
Yeah, and it's hot.
And it's hot and it's steamy. And so there's at some levels, there's sensory deprivation going on, but on other levels, there's sensory overload going on. And I think that too throws the person out of the analytical mind, if you will, and disconnects them because you're basically getting slammed in two different directions. So I don't know.
So
that's
words,
just how
it. So you're saying it's like preoccupying the analytical part of your brain where you don't have much choice.
I'm not sure that it's preoccupying or it's overloading, if you will, and making you disconnect because of the multi levels of both stimulation and lack of stimulation. You know, most of the time we don't end up having both of those things happening to us at the same time. Now, if you know what I'm saying? It's like I can't think of another environment where I've been understimulated and overstimulated at the same moment.
Well, isn't that confusion, though? And that's one of the techniques for hypnosis, is
to confuse
the analytical mind.
Absolutely.
What Mike was kind of alluding to is, in effect, true. You're confusing the analytical mind, because that's the biggest pain in the butt for hypnotists is, you know, analytical people when they're trying to, you know, figure it out. But so what you do is you make that work for you, and you send their mind on some analytical trip. And, you know, I tell them, yeah, try to figure out when you go into hypnosis. Please do. You know, think about it. You know, keep, you know, I mean, it occupies their mind, and before you know it, they're in.
Yep. Except in this process, though, there was absolutely no direction from the shaman in terms of, you know, telling you where to go or any of this. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
This is really all about you and where you went with it. Say something?
So how long were you in it? Were you in there?
Well, you know, that was funny because I had other members of my team there, and we think we went in around 4, and we think we were done around 7. But you know what? We're not positive that that's exactly – so between 2 and 3 hours.
Well, and that's one of the indications that you were in hypnosis is that you can't remember how long. I mean, every single client I've ever hypnotized, I will – typically do anywhere from probably about a 50-minute, 45-minute to an hour session with them. And one of the first questions I ask when they awake is, you know, how do you feel? And how long do you think we did that? And they'll always say, about 15 minutes. And I tell them, no, it's been an hour. And they say, no. I said, it has. You know,
right.
Look at your watch.
Now, after the first round, they open the door, and then there's another ceremony where they bring in 7 more rocks, and they essentially repeat the first ceremony. Then this time, this is where, you know, people individually pray, and, you know, like the thing the shaman was saying is, like, you know, he's not there to convert you to his religion, and he's not there for you to pray like he prays. You know, he kept bringing it back that, you know, this is a time for you to, like, reflect on what's important for you. And whatever that is, that part of your life that's important, that's what you focus on. Which, you know, I think that's really refreshing because actually I was expecting what I tend to usually find with most religious leaders, if you will, and that's that they're going to tell you how to think or what to do. And this was totally the opposite. You know, this was totally about your own individual belief and your own experience. But anyway, so the second round, you know, it was the same thing. And at this point, you know, I got to tell you, the heat's starting to be a little bit like, this isn't so much fun.
Yeah.
So I literally, at this point, decide this is a good time for me to, like, zone out so I can get away from the pain. Because I have some, like, various injuries that I've received over the years that cause me chronic pain. And one of the things that I do is I do self-hypnosis to, like, disconnect from that pain. So the sweat lodge was enough of a discomfort at this point that I thought that was a really good idea. So I did that, and I went through the second round, and I'm telling you, it was easy.
So Sharon wants to know if you were naked in there.
Well, no, not exactly. All the men had these like really thick, absorbent terry cloth type towels, okay? And then they were, you know, they're huge, and they wrapped around, and then you fasten them with this leather strap thing. Yeah. And the women basically would wear two of those that were fastened at the top and on the side, so they had like a sheath that went over to cover them. But here's the deal. You know, when you're in the lodge, it's pitch black. So, you know, you could almost be naked in there anyway because you can't see anything except when, you know, the door's open or something. But at the end of the second round, though, two of the Native Americans who had done this a number of times actually was having problems with the heat and stuff, so they needed to sit out the third round. So I'm thinking, wow. Holy cow. You know, because, like, this is my first time around, and I'm already, like, thinking, oh, this is kind of hard. I wonder if I can finish this. Mm-hmm. And then these other people who had done it, you know, dozens and dozens of times, they're ending up, you know, leaving the lodge. And I'm like, wow. But then I had this moment of, like, wow, the white guy just outlasted the Native Americans.
Yeah. Well, they can't jump, but maybe they can bear the heat.
Well, but you know what? I'm thinking that kind of, like, flippant thought came back to haunt me the third time around because I had a real hard time, and I wasn't able to do the disconnect to get away from how uncomfortable I was.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of think that was kind of a karma payback, if you will.
Let me just interject here that there's kind of a reason why we're talking about Sweat Lodge experience. We're going to be segueing into the effect, the hypnosis effect and so forth, and tying it back into paranormal research, too. Go ahead, John.
Okay. Now, let me just say that, you know, I made it through the third round, and then the fourth round occurred, and the fourth round, it's like, do I want to continue doing this? You know, you start to have this kind of struggle. And at this point, it was just so kind of uncomfortable that I wasn't getting to a place where, you know, I was having any kind of, like, out-of-body experiences and stuff.
Damn it.
Yeah. But I think that if the ceremony hadn't gotten interrupted at the second stage, that I would have stayed in that place where I could have done it. But, you know, it's like I got back to being analytical about what was going on, and I was, like, thinking, am I going to die in here? You know, I mean, seriously, you know, because I'm, like, at this point, I can hear my pulse pounding, you know, from the heat and stuff like that. And I just, you know, you start to, you know, get a little bit concerned because, you know, there's certain people that are starting to have difficulties and, you know, you just wonder. But anyway, I just ended up getting way too analytical and I wasn't able to get back to that place. Having said that, though, some really weird stuff happened inside that lodge while we were there.
Now let's talk about it.
Okay, at one point, at the beginning of the second round, at one point, in right after they initially start the ceremony, the shaman says a spirit has just entered the lodge. And I'm telling you what, there was this, like, I want to describe it like a wind. This gust of air came, like, blowing across us and around. It literally made, like, a circle around the interior of this lodge. And then it stopped. And you could hear it as it traveled because people were going, oh, you know, you could hear these, like, little exclamations and stuff like that. And it went across me, and I was like, what the hell was that? And then about a minute or two later, I'm like, you know, I'm hyper-vigilant at this point because it's just starting. I don't know what's going on. It's pitch black. Something weird just blew across me in a room that has, like, well, no windows or anything else, right?
Mm-hmm.
I thought the lady next to me, to reassure me, put her hand on my hand. But then it didn't quite feel right. And so I didn't say anything. And then later, when we were processing everything, I said, during the first round of the ceremony, did you put your hand on my hand to reassure me? And she says, no. And so then I asked the guy next to me, I said, I'm assuming you didn't put your hand on me in the dark. And he goes, oh, no, not me.
Really?
So that was weird. And, you know, 2 minutes into it, you know, I couldn't be having some weirdness from the heat. You know what I'm saying? Because
right.
you just simply weren't in there long enough. Well, into the second round, at the beginning of the second round, though, I'm looking over at this one woman. It's absolutely pitch black. And all of a sudden, I see a ball of energy, Doug.
An orb. He's going to say orb.
About the size of a tennis ball, kind of just like bouncing around this woman's head. And I'm thinking, you know, I know that my body's superheated at this point. And so there's the possibility that, you know, there's some level of hallucinating due to the heat and stuff. But I'm watching this ball, and then pretty soon there's like two, and then there's three. And they're just kind of dancing around this lady's head.
Are they, they're about the size of what?
A tennis ball.
And were they, I mean, were they bright?
Yeah, I mean, they were glowing.
Were they lighting up anybody near them, the lady near them?
They weren't lighting up the lady near, they weren't lighting up the people next to her, but they were lighting up enough that you could see the features of her face.
Oh, okay. So they weren't giving off light.
They were definitely giving off light, and they weren't embers from the center, because the center doesn't have, you know, the center are rocks. There's not a fire. It's heated rocks.
Uh-huh.
So you're not dealing with embers. Then these three things, like, form together and get to be the size of, like, maybe, I want to say, a volleyball.
Hmm.
And it goes over, and it sits on this woman's left shoulder. So I'm thinking, wow. I hope that that's,
yeah.
I hope I'm seeing that, and I'm not having some, like, brain cook-off, because, you know, still I'm in that analytical place.
Yeah, you're just stroking.
Yeah. So afterwards, you know, when we're processing what happened, I said, during the second round, did anyone see any lights in there? And like three people said, yeah, they were. We saw three, you know, one saw two, one saw three, but everyone saw them combine and land and sit on this woman's left shoulder.
Wow.
Now, the thing is during the ceremony, no one spoke about it. No one mentioned it. So it wasn't one of these kind of things like, hey, look what's over there. You see this, you know, you see the spirit energy on that person's shoulder. You know, there was no like planting the thought yet. You know, three, four people afterwards saw it and saw the same thing. And so, you know, I'd say that qualifies as paranormal. You know, what it was, you know, I have no idea. But clearly, I don't have an explanation based on, you know, what was in that environment to cause something like that.
Huh. That's amazing.
So that was interesting. The other thing is other people, you know, they actually, you know, talked about having the out-of-body experience occurring where they were like astral traveling and whatnot. And at one point when they stopped, I think it was the third round, one of the Native American women was actually laying down at that point, that she wasn't sitting up anymore. And I looked over at her face, and you could see the rapid eye movement, you know, indicating like a REM state.
Mm-hmm.
And her body had a slight twitch to it, you know. And at first, you know, I'm looking and thinking, is she having a convulsion? And then I looked at the eyes, and I could tell that it was just like a REM state. And when she came out of that, you know, there was a level of disorientation and stuff like that. But she was talking about traveling. You know, so she, you know, she claimed that she had an out-of-body experience. Now, one of the things that I have to admit to, because, you know, I'll be honest about this. At the end of the fourth round, I didn't realize it was all done. And at that point, I told the shaman, you know what? I think I've had enough. And he said, well, that's good, because we're done. And everyone laughed. But literally, at that point, man, it was like, stick a fork in me, I am done. I'd reached the end of what I was willing to do at that point.
All right, so let's get into the consciousness aspect of this whole thing. And, again, then segue into what ramifications that may have for paranormal research. Because the more I study consciousness in metaphysics, the more I understand, or the more I'm inclined to believe that, you know, what we're dealing with is connected to consciousness and to that greater awareness. I mean, that's where the psychic ability comes in, you know, dialed in to that thing. So, obviously, you've got people, and how many people participated in this?
I think there was 9 of us in the lodge.
And so, did everybody have some kind of personal experience or meaningful experience to them?
Well, you know, I would assume so, because there was 4 of us who'd never done it before, and afterwards, we all agreed that we would definitely try that again.
What did you get out of it?
Well, like I said, you know, the first 2 rounds, it was really easy to slip into that state. And, you know, I know that something touched me in there. What I don't know is, like, you know, the woman and the guy next to me, they said they didn't touch me, and I don't think they did, but something touched me, and it felt like a hand. Now, the shaman said I was touched by a spirit. But, you know,
anything?
Well, you know, I thought I did. And at one point, I thought there was a woman sitting next to me where the man was sitting, like maybe like mm-hmm. between us.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, that environment was so alien to me and so intense. I just kept going back, and I was getting real analytical with it. And, you know, the shaman actually told me that, you know, that he felt that, you know, I was too busy thinking about stuff in general. And that's because, you know, I'd actually talked to him about the whole, you know, aspects of my psychic ability and how I feel sometimes, you know, I'm just really, you know, not effective there. And he's going, well, that's because you think too much. So,
yeah.
You know, but in a sense, you know, if the ability to sense these things at a different level is like going to that place that we go to when we do hypnosis, then I'd have to agree with them. That's probably what it is. Because I know, for instance, Doug, if you tried to hypnotize me, you'd probably end up crying by the end of it. Because I don't go down. Because, yeah. You know, I'm there. As you're talking, I'm going, oh, he did that really well, but oh my God, that sucks, man. I could do way better than that.
No, and you'd never say that.
Well, no, well, actually, a lot of hypnotists have tried to put me under.
Oh.
And I've gone under a couple times, but it's really a struggle because I don't mean to do it, but I end up analyzing their technique.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and because of that, I don't go under.
So did you get anything meaningful out of this experience?
Well, first of all, I think there's something to it from a researcher's standpoint. That whole process, I think that it's clearly worth looking into and trying, you know, to understand more about the whole process and what's going on in that environment. Me personally, at the end of the second time, I felt like I was leaving my body at one point, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I'd like to try it again at some time and see if I could actually do what people write about in terms of like an astral travel or have an out of body experience. So that's what I'm saying. I'm totally intrigued with it. The other aspect of it was, just from a cultural standpoint, you know, mm-hmm. the people that were conducting the ceremony were very welcoming, very genuine. Gregory at one point said, yeah, you know, your life, you know, kind of won't ever be the same type from that experience. And, you know, the reality is, coming out of that sweat lodge, things are a little different, you know?
Well, that's the point of doing things such as that really encourage personal growth and expansion, is that when we when we learn, when we grow, when we're in that kind of an altered state, you know, we come out of it stretched, so to speak. Our mind is stretched. Of course, you know, when the mind is stretched, it can never go back to where it was. So that's all part of the journey and growing. And the whole thing about the whole objective of a sweat lodge is what fascinates me, and it's the same thing that fascinates me about hypnosis, because that is like a doorway or a pathway into greater awareness, into the greater consciousness or the higher consciousness, the higher self. And in those places we can find, you know, that's where we can start diving in or looking within to find the answers that we're seeking in many ways, and for life decisions, for just a greater understanding. And and the whole thing, in my opinion, is an expansion. It expands a person's consciousness. It expands their awareness. And that's the whole thing. So now once we get into that, we are now getting into the realm of where, you know, paranormal stuff happens. I mean, and a lot of people who have this innate psychic ability or psychic sensitivity begin to pick up on these things. And that's what fascinates me, are these things, this altered state is really what it is. Is that where we start tapping into things greater than our science can currently explain?
Yeah, I think that's exactly where it's at.
You know, I talked to John earlier today, and I was having this discussion about what had changed in me from the abduction experiences and having you hypnotize me, Doug, and, you know, working me back to a grounded state of life and help, you know, teaching me. And, you know, what's amazing to me is people that start experiencing psychic events and all, they talk about them being out of the ordinary. And I'm starting to wonder, is the reality of it is it's always been there. It's actually totally natural. Yet, because of our living circumstances and technology and everything else, we've totally thrown that entire awareness away.
Yeah.
In a sense. You know, being brought up that way. Your filters are turned on, and all of a sudden you don't see any of this stuff anymore as you would as a child. So, you know, that's kind of interesting. And then you have people like, you know, Gregory and a few others out there that are true psychics, and they grew up, you know, dealing with it. So it's part of their reality. It's normal to them just as much as drinking water, you know. And I just find it fascinating. You know, it really goes back to your belief systems and all that. It's really kind of neat, sociologically speaking.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I believe that so much of this stuff overlaps. Because if the abduction scenario is more of a psychic thing, and if hauntings obviously involve some psychic sensitivity, and then we have UFOs can involve it as well, you know, we've got something going on. I mean, Grant and I have talked about the trickster and that kind of thing. Mike and I have too, a lot. It's like there's something there. I mean, that's what Jacques Vallée talked about. It's like there's this thing there that's causing this. I don't know what to make of it. I don't know if anybody's been watching this new series. I believe it's on, maybe it's on the Science Channel. It's The Wormhole with Morgan Freeman. And the last episode they had here a few days ago, last Wednesday, had a great, great explanation on membrane theory, or membrane theory and string theory. And it really explained it in a, I suppose, in an easier way for me, where you have these parallel universes, so to speak, and they, on the screen, they showed them as squares, that they were parallel. And what they end up doing is at some point touching, and that creates a universe, or it creates the Big Bang. And then they start expanding, which is called inflation. They get further, a little bit further apart, and then they start coming back together and again create another big bang. Now, the interesting and fascinating thing about this is that these membranes are the distance between the two universes is so infinitely small that it you can't even comprehend it. I think they were saying a trillionth of a trillionth of the size of an atom. I mean, they're right there, you know, these different realities. And so I often wonder what that may have, what effect that may have on what we're experiencing. You know, do they overlap at times? And I know that if they touch, they, according to these theories, that they create a big bang. So I don't know about that. But it's like this. There's something on this plane of this greater consciousness that is there that we can sense, but we can't quite touch yet. Any thoughts?
No, I mean,
I've been drinking.
Well, I think that actually is a sufficient explanation, actually, for a lot of paranormal events. I don't know how many. Well, as a matter of fact, I'd almost say that 100% of paranormal events show up and disappear without trace evidence. Almost 100%.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
Except for UFO landings, and then you get impressions, but you really don't have anything to show for. And which would suggest that it's... Well, you know what I mean, though. There's not like just overwhelming... It's not like going out and at a murder scene and picking up evidence. You know, it's just... If there is stuff there, it's very minimal. When it's dealing with ghosts or abductions, you know, pretty much non-existent evidence outside of photographs or, you know, the occasional implant that's, you know, supposedly there. But not yet to actually.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Kathy's talking about something in the chat room about basically hypnotizing somebody to have them do an out-of-body experience. And then essentially, can you set up cameras to measure any kind of an energy release? And Kevin was suggesting a thermal imager to do that. And I think that's probably the best bet. I don't know if it'll pick up anything. And it reminded me of, maybe you guys remember, but remember years and years ago, somebody was doing experiments with bodies, you know, people who were on their deathbed and measuring
and
the weight.
Them?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, of course, I think I don't think that there was enough experimentation in that to really have any kind of an objective answer, but the energy release, because, you know, energy really has no mass, if I'm remembering correctly. And
I'll tell you the thing that would be in that kind of experiment that would also be cool to get a hold of is this full spectrum camera alongside the thermal.
You know, well, John's so got both those on his team anyway.
Yeah.
And you are hypnotized.
Yeah. You know, I mean that would make for an interesting experiment, you know. You know, earlier in the chat room, someone was speculating maybe that was, you know, what we were seeing, was that person was about to astral travel, perhaps.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's as a valid as possibility as anything else, you know, in terms of what we were seeing in there, because we simply don't know, you know. Also, just because I knew that Sharon would want to know this, I asked the shaman, by any chance, are we going to see any skinwalkers tonight? And he laughed. He said, I don't think so, but you never know. So, Sharon, I was thinking of you.
Well, you know, the whole thing about the Sweat Lodge experience is to open up your mind, right, your greater awareness, your higher self. And that's something that we can do in meditation as well, you know, in those quiet times. I mean, I continue to do that and practice that, especially, you know, at night before I'm going to sleep, before I'm too tired, you know, do some meditation, open up. And you can use visualization techniques to do that. You know, you can imagine whatever you want. You can imagine, you know, the windows of your mind all opening up, you know, being opened to possibilities and trying to get in touch with that, with your higher self or with that greater awareness. And that's I keep stumbling around it, but that's where my interest lies in, could that be playing a part in a lot of these things? In other words, you saw, once you got going, you saw these balls of light, these spheres that were lit up, these balls of light. I'm not going to say the O word. And so, you know, is that when, as has been speculated before, is that when this other world, if you will, can interact with us? And Sharon wants to know, define meditation. That's just thinking. That's going inward. It's being quiet. It's, you know, you light up some candles if that helps. You maybe light up some incense if that helps. Whatever you do to get inside your head and really ponder and think deeply and allow yourself to just be free, clear your mind.
Yeah. Good time for introspection.
That's the word.
Stuff like that. Yeah. I have a question for both of you guys, since both of you guys have done therapeutic type work. Is it possible, in your opinion, for a person to get worked up from their own expectations and so forth to actually create, I wouldn't say so much a hypnotic state, but their brain is keyed into that kind of energy level of what's going on?
Wasn't me.
I got it.
Not me.
But you see what I'm saying? That, like, if a person was worked up, let's say you have a client that has a ghost in their house and it's scaring the crap out of them, but the trigger mechanism is that's causing the psychic event is the fact that their belief system has got them worked up to believe in bad ghosts and all that stuff, and they're literally putting themselves into that state of mind, just like if you were in hypnosis or you were doing chant or meditation kind of situation. Is it possible the brain could do that?
Well, I think that people can condition themselves to have a specific response, if that's what you're asking. Like, I've told this to Doug before, you know, I could take some people on an investigation and very easily get them to be thinking they're seeing stuff that isn't there.
Get them worked up.
So,
well, and that's what happens so often on some of these investigations is people go into a place. I mean, we talked about Waverly Hills last week. I mean, think about how many groups go into Waverly Hills with all the preconditioning. They're expecting to see something, and many times they're not disappointed. I mean, John went in not really expecting to see anything, and he still saw something. So maybe that's something. But what about some of these other sites? There may have some kind of a reputation, but really more folklorish, you know, not so real. Yet they go in and they experience. I mean, if you go to the Lizzie Borden house, you know, think of that. I mean, that's been, we all know that story.
Right.
And people go in there, and yet, is there really anything there? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I think that anyone that's like really serious about being a well-rounded investigator in terms of, you know, the paranormal, they really need to have a basic understanding of hypnosis. See, I'm plugging the course here.
Uh-huh.
But the reality is they really need to have a basic understanding, because we're dealing with people. And because of that, we have to understand how the mind works and how hypnosis and beliefs and stuff come into play in terms of altering people's perceptions of events or creating false events, if you will. So again, you've written a very good introduction to hypnosis that, you know, people should be reading and getting that level of background, because it will help them be better investigators.
There's, and just in case you don't know, in case our members don't know it, there is a new course on an introduction to hypnosis on Paranexus Academy, and members can take that course for free. Now, I didn't write that course, but I did edit it. I took the information which I purchased the rights to and edited it. Sounds like I'm stuttering. And and it is a good introduction to hypnosis. And I'm also working on other courses for that. Maybe a year and a half ago, I did a live course on hypnosis, especially as applied to paranormal research. I may bring that back. And that also reminds me of something we're testing right now. We're testing webinar software so that we can do webinars, so we can do live classes. And I'm considering doing a live CPI course, perhaps over the course of a month or so, maybe four Saturdays, you know, a couple hours each time, and help people get through the CPI course. And we can do that with other courses too. So that's just something to keep
in
mind.
I'd be interested in to do that as a refresher. I mean, just to come back and take it over again just to refresh.
And there's something to be said, you know, for more of a live training. A lot of people prefer that over self-study, but just something to keep in mind. But we hope to have that software to fully test it here in probably in the next week or so. And then we'll be scheduling some live webinars. But those are some of the benefits of being a Paranexus member. So if you're not, come and join us at paranexus.org. I'm going to plug it. Always.
Cool.
Always. All right.
Yeah, Kevin C. in the chat room says we need to be more in tune and trained in the psychology behind parapsychology and paranormal investigation. And you know what? That's absolutely true. I don't know how you could do this work effectively if you don't have that component with you.
Yep. Because most of this, you know, is psychology. We've beat that one a lot over the last couple of years. You know, just there is so much psychology to this, and that's the stuff we got to rule out. And a lot of times people think, well, geez, you know, if it's all psychology, well, what part of it's real? Well, you know, not as much as you might think. And that's just the way it is. I mean, I wish we could put up more genuine pictures and video of apparitions and things like that, but the fact is that they're just not around. They just don't exist. I mean, there's a few here and there that we can't explain, but man, there's just not much. There's just not much good evidence to show for what we do. And that's what we've got to change, folks. We have, as a community, as a paranormal community, as anomalous researchers, we've got to come together. We've got, as a community, to stop competing. We've got to stop bickering and having these petty infights, which are common in the paranormal field, and they're common in the field of ufology. They're common in any human endeavor. But we need to outgrow those things. We've got to stop competing. We've got to come together. We've got to share. We have to sharpen each other because we're all we got. And I've said this before, and I'll get on my bandwagon here for a second. You know, we're doing a good work here. This is not so much a hobby as it is a potential huge benefit to humanity. I mean, I'm not just blowing smoke either. Think about it. You know, if we can find sufficient proof of life after death, think of the ramifications and the meaning that will have to the human condition. And even if we find that it's not real, think of the meaning it will have to the human condition. Either way, we win. And so I just put this out there. We've got to come together. We have to. This is important. We can't get so wrapped up in the day-to-day issues of life where we end up just existing and not living. We have to really focus on what's truly important. And yes, there are many things that are truly important in life, relationships, family. Yes, we have to work and all that. But think about the greater good. Think about the greater meaning that what we're doing can have to humanity. I mean, it is truly a noble work, perhaps one of the most noble works there are. All right, I'm off my bandwagon now.
No, I mean, I just want to, you know, add just a brief thing to that. You know, it's like the work that we do, if we can get conclusive proof, you know, it answers so many questions that mankind has had since the beginning of time.
It That's all we've been, I mean, it's part of the nature of existence. It's what metaphysics is about, and that's what paranormal research is about. It's all metaphysical. It's theorizing. It's asking the questions, you know, who are we? Where did we come from? Where are we going? Why are we here? What's the nature of existence? That's what this is all tied up in. And I love it because we can do this, folks. I believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. I'm back on my bandwagon now. We can do this. We don't have to listen to the naysayers of the world that come in many forms, including skeptics and debunkers. Remember, skepticism is not the halfway mark between belief and disbelief. You know, belief and disbelief are two sides of the same coin. And, yeah. Mike, we do have a caller, but I don't know that we have much time. We're back down to 4 minutes. And so if you, we'll see what Mike gets with that. Anyway, so we've got, Gregory's saying, Doug, sound like a preacher. You must be a winner and not a sinner. I'm preaching down. All right, so a lot of interesting stuff to do, but come and join us at Paranexus. You know, we're nonprofit. We're trying to build an association. We're like a trade association. Like, you know, you might join a trade association at work. That's what Paranexus is about. And we need good people. I mean, we've got some open positions that we've been trying to fill for a long time. And I'm puzzled as to why people haven't been jumping on that one. I mean, they get free membership. And the other thing that I'm going to say is that the benefits you get with being a Paranexus member for $59 a year, which is like, what, 16 cents a day, they blow away most every other association for the benefits. So as far as the caller, we're down to 3 minutes, and I'm afraid we're not going to have time to get you on, but we would love to have you on. If you please join us next week, and please come on and talk about whatever. I wish we had more time. So anyway, folks, we're getting short on time. John, thanks for sharing your experiences with the Sweat Lodge. That was interesting.
Well, it's my pleasure. I mean, it was an interesting experience. I hope other people have an opportunity to, if they ever have the chance to do that, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely an experience.
Yes, it is. And for those of you who have joined us in the chat room, we appreciate your joining us. We appreciate you joining us every week. Don't forget, this Thursday coming up on Paranexus Universe, we have Dr. David Lewis Anderson. He's returning for a 90-minute special show. If you recall, he joined us before on to discuss time travel. He studies that. He's a physicist. So we're going to be talking about some of the parallels between time and time slips and paranormal activity. So please join us there. We are going to start some music to take us out. Folks, we hope you have a great week. Mike, appreciate you taking our
hey, no problem, guys. You everybody have a good night.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mike.
And we'll see everybody, hopefully, in the chat room on Thursday night. Have a great week, folks.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.